only 6 o'clock in the morning and my heartbeat is out of control. 10 minutes into boarding feels like I'm about to explode. Time for the ride up, tension started to swirl. I can't believe I'm gonna free fall from the top of the world. Senses peaked with a crazy anticipation. Feeling like this, tell me how the hell can I be patient? Jumpsuit rig, Google helmet all in place. Double checking just in case. I'm elated, baby, freedom one green light away. And I just can't wait. Spread my wings, time to fly. One step out, all it takes for me to touch the sky, so amazing, so liberating. 12,000 feet, AGL, so breathtaking. Belly down, box me now. 4 minutes of pleasure without any spark of distraction around. State of mind, euphoria, wish could last forever. From this day on, nothing can stop us from getting back together.
Night Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine. Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
It is Thursday night, and if you can hear our voices, you are exactly where you need to be. She is Karen Frazier. I am Rick Hale. This is Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. Welcome. So, Karen.
Rick.
How was your Thanksgiving?
It was nice to not have to do a show for a change, to tell you the truth. It was lovely. My oven broke 3 days before Thanksgiving.
No.
Yeah, it did.
It was having the Fitbit box in your house. I know it.
But there were pies in the Fraser household anyway. I actually went online to Amazon.com. I did a little research, found the biggest toaster oven I could possibly find, and ordered it. Got it here on Wednesday. And was able to bake my pies, and that thing is huge. So I have a huge toaster oven now.
Fantastic. Yeah, I mean you can't have Turkey Day without the pie. It's almost a must. But you know what? I'm gonna safely assume that, you know, back then they probably didn't have all that we have now with the turkey, and I'm kind of wondering, it's like, historically, what is it that they ate with the Native Americans when they came? Do you know? I have no idea.
Corn.
That's probably all they had.
I actually read an article about it, and because I am getting old, I can't exactly tell you what they said. But at the time, I was like, oh, that's very interesting. They probably ate whatever they could hunt and forage. I mean, you know, at the time of the year that they did it.
And blowing ginormous holes in them with their musket rifles. So.
That's right. So that's I do not like turkey.
Really? You don't like turkey? How can you not? Well, hold on a second. You don't like Halloween. You don't like turkey. What is there left?
I like a lot of things. Okay. But yeah, I'm not a huge fan of turkey. I'll eat it. But I really hate turkey leftovers. And I'd just rather have, my family actually told me, well, if we have Thanksgiving at our house this year, you can't cook a turkey. And so I was going to make a prime rib, and then we got invited to a friend's house. So they wound up having to eat turkey anyway. Suck it, family.
Suck it.
I know.
But, yeah, I mean, it was interesting here at the Hale household. It was the even year, so it was just Jamie's family. So yeah, we had the traditional spread. And then the one thing that I really love about, like, Jamie stuffing is she puts a lot of sage in it. Mm. So
does she use fresh or dried?
Oh, no, it's fresh.
Yes, very good.
So good. So not only is sage good for expelling evil spirits from your house, it's also good
at
for
expelling evil spirits from your bot, no.
From your colon, exactly.
Yeah.
So so with that being said, I had a really interesting time since the last show. I was recently invited by Evan Davis out of Davenport, Iowa, to appear and speak at the Quad Cities Paracon coming up in June. You know what? There was, for the longest time, was I honestly believed that nobody was interested in Rick, but apparently they are. So
there you go. You got somebody. You got somebody on the hook. Now reel that in, buddy.
I am reeling that in. I'm going to make that mine.
Very good. That's exciting. So where is this going to be? I'm sorry.
It's going to be in Davenport, Iowa, which is part of the Quad Cities.
I'm not going to be there.
You know what? I wish you could be. Do you know how great that would be?
It would be really awesome.
To have the whole Pug team there. But also Jenny Gurney from Paranormal Hotspot is going to be there, you know, as well as some, I think Joe Kudo from the Skeptical Edge is going to be there as well, as and Kale Kelly. So Z-Talk will be represented, and will be represented well, I think.
Very good. And so will Paranormal Underground Radio. And I will tell you, it's fine. I go to and represent Paranormal Underground at conferences by myself on a regular basis.
Mm. See, this is going to be my first Paracon, and I am representing the magazine in the show. And I'm going to tell you this right now, and I'm sure Jenny Gurney, if she's listening, she will attest to this. I plan on embarrassing the hell out of this show.
Oh, well, you do that. I just sit there alone up against a wall and, you know, pray that nobody talks to me, and if they do, I start to cry. So I think I really represent the show quite well when I do these things. So speaking of, I actually am going to be appearing tomorrow night somewhere.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And so if you are in the state of Washington and you are in need of Christmas gifts and you'd like to go shop for Christmas gifts in a haunted location with a gift shop as well, the Lewis County Historical Museum, which was actually featured on the biography show My Ghost Story, is having an author's evening. They're having a lot of local authors come and sell their books and sign their books, and it promises to be a really great evening. And
And there, wait, there's more.
Well, it benefits the museum, and it's haunted. So great. There you go. Yeah, so, I'll be doing that tomorrow evening. If you happen to be anywhere near Chehalis, come on down to Lewis County Historical Museum between 5 and 7 p.m. And if you buy a book for only $109.99, I'll sign it for you.
So that's how you plan on making your money then?
$109.99, that's right. I think it's like $10. I think my books are $10.
So. You know what? And I'm going to tell you something. It's a brilliant book. I've read it twice. Jamie, who is probably the most skeptical person concerning this, she read the book and she enjoyed it too. So, I mean, if Jamie can be turned on by a book like that, then it must be good.
There you go. Well, and this is the new updated version. It's got a little bit of information about some of the things that have happened at Wellington since I originally wrote the book. And it's just, I'm happy to be included. I like to meet some of the local authors who do a lot of writing about local history, history of Lewis County and history of the state of Washington. And so makes me happy.
You know, it's like Wellington is definitely one of those places that's on my bucket list. After reading the book and, you know, watching what you sent me and talking to you and hearing the passion in your voice, it sounds like one of those amazing places that has a ton of activity in it. And, you know, it should be one of those places that should be preserved, you know, forever and all time.
I absolutely agree. And that's one of my goals is to really not just spread the word that, hey, this place is haunted. These people are still there. Because that doesn't always bring a lot of, you know, you get a lot of people who are don't treat haunted places with respect who go there as well. But what's important to me is to preserve that history, to share the history, and to inspire the same awe that I feel for it in other people.
Correct. That sounds great.
Yeah, and so I'm excited about that. And then I'll be at the Oregon City Ghost Conference here coming up in March, too, which is, by the way, if you are in Oregon or Washington and you want to head to Oregon City, it is amazing. The entire town is haunted. Our good friend William Becker is one of the two who run the conference along with Rocky Smith. And they do amazing work on this conference. It is the best time. Last year was the best time I've ever had at a ghost conference. We had a great time, and you know, we had such a good time that the people downstairs from us had to call our hotel room and ask us to shut up.
You know, that's, you know, it's so funny because it's like when a bunch of nerds get together and people are saying, you know, shut up, you're being too loud. You know, it's got to be a good party because nerds always put on great parties. There's anime, ghost stories, all that kind of stuff. So.
Absolutely. So I wanted to talk about one other thing in the few minutes we have left before we go to break. And this has been actually a fairly big and really tragic story in the paranormal world. And that's that there was a paranormal investigator here actually right around Thanksgiving who was investigating a location, and there were animal droppings around. She inhaled those. Mm-hmm. And she got hantavirus, I believe. I think, or something like hantavirus, and it killed her.
Yeah, you know what? It's really sad. And the funny thing is like I've actually had somebody on my Facebook page say that they can't find anything concerning this, but I have. And it's a real story, and this woman really did tragically die. And I think it's terrible that anybody would even question something like that.
Yes, her name is Sarah Harris.
Right.
And her husband, Shane Harris, is making it his mission to remind people that you do need to be safe when you investigate. And, you know, I've crawled around moldy basements and all sorts of things. And we have masks that we take with us on investigations as part of our standard equipment, which I think is really, really important. Right. And we don't always wear them because they're annoying and they make your face sweat and, you know, all of that stuff. But this should be a reminder to everybody, because this woman should not die in vain. We do sometimes go into situations where it's not terribly safe.
No, it really is. And it's not only not safe for us physically, but it's all, you know, a lot of these places aren't really safe for people spiritually as well. So it's also important to take those kind of precautions as well.
Right.
So,
right.
But so, Karen, do you think we should take a quick break and come back? But before we do that, I need to give a shout out to local talk, 1410 AM in Northern California. So, hey, thanks for listening tonight. I hope you enjoy the show.
All right. So stick around. We are going to go to break. And when we come back, we are going to be talking to one of our favorite people, Jill Marie Morris. Mm-hmm. So stick around. We will be right back. This is Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Everyone, it's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
First there came radio, and it was good. Then it got bad. Then there came satellite radio, and it was okay. Then it got too expensive and kind of sucked. Now there is something new, something better, something free. Stitcher Radio for the iPhone and BlackBerry. With Stitcher, you can hear all the shows and podcasts you can imagine, rate them, and build your own station. No downloading, no syncing, no problem. Just pick a station to get started, like American news and politics. Now, look at the shows you have to pick from, pick one, and start listening. Like it, make a favorite, and start your own station. Don't like it? Thumb it down and say bye-bye to shows like it. Or thumb it up to find more like it. Plus, you can search and find your favorite podcasts. We have over 1,000 shows to pick from. Stitcher Radio, the natural evolution in audio listening. And it's free.
On the go and missing another one of your favorite Z-Talk shows? Now you don't have to. Simply go to the Google Play Store on your Android phone and download the Z-Talk Radio app. The best part is, it's absolutely free. That's Z-Talk Radio, only found in your Google Play Store on your Android phone. Download it today.
Thank you. dot the hillsides where once there were hickory and chestnuts.
Identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. See, Cheryl, that time I didn't forget. Tonight...
Yeah, but then you have to be smooth about it. Jeez, Rick.
I know. No, but you know, you're right. I could be a little bit more smoother. Like, hey, baby, welcome to ZTalk. So, okay, tonight joining us, actually coming back to the underground, is going to be Jill Marie Morris. Jill Marie Morris is a medium, paranormal investigator, paranormal researcher, as well as the author of 207, A Personal Account of Love, Paranormal Phenomena, and Demonic Possession, and spoiler alert, as well as an upcoming documentary. Jill Marie Morris, welcome back to the underground.
Hello, and thank you for having me back on.
Yeah, thanks for being brave enough to come back on.
I love this show. Oh, stop.
Oh, thank you. So, Jill, you got a lot that's going on right now. If you wouldn't mind, you know, we have, you know, a lot of new listeners and stuff. If you could just, you know, give people, you know, a quick thumbnail sketch of what your original book, 207, A Personal Account of Love, Paranormal Phenomenon, and Demonic Possession. What is it all about?
Well, it is based on really a very small period of time in the late 1980s, after moving into an apartment in upstate New York. And it really, the synopsis is about just about a year's period of time for most of the events that transpire in the book. And then it kind of starts to bring things forward. And when we moved into this place, I had been married not quite 2 years. I was pregnant for my first son. And we moved into a house that I, from the start, did not have a good feeling about.
Sure.
And even just prior to moving in, had some very unsettling, bizarre dreams that I talk about in the book. And after moving in, with great, you know, hesitation about doing so, had a lot of things transpire, more so directed towards my husband. And I was trying to kind of filter things and figure things out. I was only, 22 or so, 23 years old. And at that time, even being a medium all of my life, I had not encountered anything so negative at that point. Yeah, there were some negative things I could, you know, pick up on, but nothing to the extent of what transpired while we lived there. And
right.
There was paranormal activity that transpired. There were friends of ours that had stayed, that had experiences. I had thought from pretty much the first time I was in the house, someone had passed, but that could not be confirmed until down the road.
Right.
But I really did a lot of blocking while I was there as time progressed and my husband's behavior, really, there's no better word to say other than it was bizarre and he was really in a downward spiral. We moved in approximately late spring, early summer of 88, and by around November to December of 1988, my son was born in September, my husband was really at a crossroads where things really started to get out of hand come the beginning of the new year. And we're talking personality changes. We're talking the activity in the house picked up. I did a couple of house blessings that really did not do much, if anything, at all. And just so much took place in that house. And I ended up leaving him in late spring the following year, in 1989, because took a deadly turn, a very dangerous turn. And after leaving for about a month and living with my mom, taking my son and going to live with my mom, who was doing the supervised visitations because my husband was unable to control himself, we had dinner on the night of June 28th, and he showed up with two paper bags, which we thought had toys. I did see some toys in the bags.
Mm-hmm.
And later that evening, after he had taken a nap after he ate, which was unusual in itself, I was getting ready to what we thought we were going to do was open up the gifts that he had brought, and instead I turned around after taking my son out of the high chair and was facing a 12-gauge shotgun, and my husband tried to shoot and kill my son and I. And
good God.
My mother saved us, literally saved us.
Now, let me ask you something. When you met your husband, did you see any of this kind of behavior? Because this kind of behavior definitely is can be attributed to, you know, a preternatural influence, but did you see anything, mental illness, drug abuse, alcoholism, anything of that nature that would attribute it to this?
To be honest, there was no mental illness, no.
Okay.
He was always a social drinker. He loved to watch football and baseball, and on the weekends he was a very hard worker, And he would basically, you know, hang out with his friends on the weekends and, you know, have some beer, or if we went to a party, he would drink. He did occasionally smoke pot, to be completely honest with you. Nothing to...
It's legal here in Washington. It's okay.
Right. Yeah, I don't think that... You know what, if it's okay for me to say, I don't think I've ever known any pot smokers to grab a shotgun and try to kill anybody.
Exactly.
They're usually just
unless
happy
it's
to sit there
with
Twinkies.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. But no, he was, and I really tried to balance the tragedy and the horror with these memories, the positive memories and the recollections of what a kind person he was. That's what had always attracted me to him. He would have given anything for anybody, and he was always rooting for the underdog. He was, like I said, a hard worker. And after moving into that house, something changed. And everything, like I have tried to analyze and overanalyze, and I've talked to people, and I've talked to priests, and I've talked to friends. Even when I was in New York last month, Sarah, who, if anybody has read the book, I still am very close with Sarah, and
yes,
who was my neighbor, and we still talk about it. It was at something in that house, and I have to interject something here because being on the show before, she just recently, when I was up in New York, divulged to me because, like I said, she lived right next door, and actually her house was right in front of where the Rite Aid pharmacy is, and she had a very strange and similar situation she never told anybody about until she told me and another good friend of ours when I was just up there.
So okay. Was it the house or was it the neighborhood? Was it the area, the land?
It is the land. Yeah. I'm almost certain. Yeah.
So you're a medium, and you've been aware of your abilities your entire life.
Yes.
So when you, I've forgotten, I'm sorry, remind me, did you buy or rent this place?
We rented. We were in the second story out of three stories of a flat.
So when you went to look and did the walkthrough to rent your, were there any red flags? Was there any type of communication? Or because you feel that it was a demonic thing, does that not tweak your radar the same way that a spirit would?
Well, that's a very good question, and there's a couple things that transpired. I didn't have a good feeling before I even went to the house, even though it was right next door to our very good friends, and I was pregnant, and she was going to end up, because she actually did child care, that was her business, and it was a very good situation.
Right.
The whole way around, because we had our friends next door, and so on and so forth. So I just did not. Something immediately struck me odd. I never would look at the house when we were over at Sarah's house. I just totally blocked it even before I even went to look at it. So here we go, and my husband really was like, you have to just let all this stuff go and just clear your mind and look at it for what it is and try to be objective. So I, from the start, I picked up on somebody, a male having passed, but I had never had experience with something to this extent. Like I said, this awful, I cannot even to this day just put one word on it to describe the feeling.
So,
and what I did was I had argued with him for a few days. Prior to actually deciding to go in, to move in, I just had to say, okay, the less emotional approach and the more sensible thing to do is to just say, I'm just going to have to deal with it, because it was such a good situation the whole way around, despite me as the only one who was picking up on this stuff. So
right. Yeah.
We did move in, and did I think it was demonic at the time? Absolutely not. I knew it was something I had never sensed before.
Mm-hmm.
And, go ahead.
If I could ask you, now, when you say demonic, I mean, it's kind of like a really popular term that's thrown around quite a bit these days. Now, when you say demonic, are you talking about, you know, fallen angel, red jammies, pitchforks kind of guys, or are you talking about something else?
I'm talking about something else, and you're absolutely right, and that really gets my cupcakes frosted when I you so.
We've talked about this on Facebook before.
Nowadays, yeah. But essentially, this is something. Again, I didn't even attribute it to quote unquote demonic until our priest and my grandmother mentioned it after my husband committed suicide because of different events that, with hindsight, made sense. But I walked into it going, "Holy cow! This is the worst energy. It's disgusting. It is it was like a cesspool of just and beyond negative. It was.
I've only come across that once.
Oh,
in my travels. Yeah. But sometimes your brain overrides your gut.
Yep. Absolutely.
See, yeah. And I think that's, you know, and with being a medium, I mean, let's face it, your gut is your, you know, finely attenuated.
It's your barometer, yeah.
BS-o-meter, you know, it's, yeah. I'd say definitely go with your gut and your instinct, you know, before you go with, you know, with anything else.
Well,
it serves you right every time.
Yeah, no. At that stage it was really hard. And I did, you know, after talking to our priest and to my grandmother, and then actually ran into a psychic with my mother trying to get hypnotized to stop smoking after the fact, I blamed myself for not being strong and standing my ground about not wanting to move in there, because it was a bone of contention. I did not want to do it. I cannot tell you. I mean, it was really quite a disagreement. And I just, you know, my husband was so practical and sensible, and he knew I was medium and am a medium, but back then when he was alive, you know, he trusted what I was saying, but he was just like, you know, here we have, it was a beautiful apartment, I have to say.
Right.
House was built in the 1800s. That aside, you know, here I'm pregnant. I have a baby that I'm expecting, and I have to go back to work after I have the child. So it was really practicality and trying to be less emotional. And that's, like I said, why I felt somewhat guilty with hindsight that I did not stand my ground on that.
Well,
yeah,
but I'm a big believer, and this sounds trite when you say it to somebody who's going through something, and yet it's something that I've always believed in my own personal life, that everything has a greater purpose behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, do you feel like that there was a greater purpose behind this, and does that help? Where do you sit with the guilt now?
I don't. The guilt has gone, and you're absolutely right with that as well. There is a higher purpose. I am on the same page with you with that. And as odd as it may sound, I have to say that I have been able to help people, and there are other people that do the same thing. So I'm not making myself out to be anybody special. What I'm trying to say is that the people that I've helped, at least there has been a deterrence from possibly any further tragedy occurring. Mm-hmm. I have also learned to be incredibly determined and strong. I have to say that growing up the way that I grew up, I had a very nice, as far as, you know, we didn't really want for anything materialistically, but mm-hmm. I was a little bit spoiled, I guess you could say, when I was younger. So here I was pretty much, I had never, living in the house was one thing. Going through my husband's death, a completely different story. And that made me realize that no matter how bad things may appear to be, you can't sweat the small stuff. Yeah. And there are far greater powers to be that have more control in life than people are willing to give credit to. So it was an awareness, and it was, for me personally, a strengthening situation. It really helped me through other periods in life. But at the same time, it was one of the worst from 1988 moving into that house until up until Jim had passed, it was the worst situation in my life. And then when he passed, it, to me, it doesn't get worse than that. It really doesn't.
Absolutely. So I'd like to ask about your son, mm-hmm. because you were pregnant with him when this was going on.
Yeah.
And gosh, if it was 1988, he's an adult now.
Yeah.
Does he feel like it affected him in any way that's positive and redeemable? How does he feel about it?
Interesting question. Both of my sons and I are extremely close. And my oldest son, Jimmy, he is just turned 24 and just a lot like his dad, very, very hard worker, very grounded, has a wicked funny sense of humor. And one thing after Jim's passing, and Jimmy was only, he was between 8 and 9 months old at the time, so he doesn't remember him as you know, having a father.
Right.
That
perspective. However, teaching him growing up, it really was a pivotal point in my life where I said, we respect things we don't know. Again, this was by far the most horrific thing I had ever encountered in eye-opening spiritually. So I, from that point, even being raised Roman Catholic, I said, you know, we are lucky to be alive. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, sure.
So absolutely.
Whatever comes into play as far as, you know, religion or whatever, all I want are my son at the one time. I hadn't had my second son yet. I just want to raise very strong, spiritually in tune children. And it may sound kind of sissy-ish. It's not at all. But an interesting thing with that was I always have been open-minded. I say there are good and bad religion. There are good and bad in every whatever. But the choice is to try to see the bigger picture, but mm-hmm. listen to your gut. And as he grew older, and it's so strange, he wanted to be the Pope, as weird as that sounds. And
when I was a little boy, I wanted to be a priest. I know what that was like.
Really?
I was raised Catholic. I wanted to be a priest, and then I discovered something that kind of put the kibosh on those plans, and that was girls.
My son, we were watching the news, I think it was, and the Pope was supposed to go to, I believe it was in New York City, and this was in the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. And I want to say it was about 94. And, you know, I was always like, whatever you want to do, you do, and, you know, just be a good person. And he turns to me and he goes, Mom, he goes, I can't wait to be the Pope. And I said, well, Jim, I said, you know, you better start planning now. And he goes, I just want to take care of all these people and all of the animals. And I'm like, oh, that's so cute. And then he says, and I want to take care of my wife. And I said, oh.
Well, there you have it. Pope is out.
There you have it. I said, Jim, the Pope does not get married to a wife. The Pope is married to God. And that is it. And he was heartbroken because to him, he just wanted to have a family and take care of everybody. So I said at that point, don't cry, because he cried. I said, don't cry, you can't be the Pope. You can still be a pastor. You can help people. He is very much a humanitarian.
Sure.
And that's how he's always been. He tries to keep an open mind. He is very much a counselor amongst his friends. He just is very strong, and he is gifted.
That was
going to
be my next question, it really doesn't fit with the evidence.
He sounds a little indigo to me.
he is.
Yeah.
But go ahead, Rick, you were going to...
I was just going to say that it seems that the evidence does point towards the possibility of there being a biological component in people with, you know, legitimate psychic abilities, and that they're able to pass it on. I mean, it comes down through my grandmother. I got a little bit of it, I guess. And I'm kind of thinking that maybe my little boy got some of it too. So, but there does appear to be, you know, evidence pointing towards that. Would you agree?
I totally agree. And this was something I was just talking to Sarah about. There's been a mystery, and it's funny that we're talking about this. After my husband died, I remarried 2 years later, And when we married, we moved out into Western New York State. Now, people have asked me, when the whole thing transpired at 207, and also my husband's best friend committed suicide after staying in the house as well.
Wow.
It was a situation where it stopped. I didn't have any, after leaving that house, I didn't have any issue, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we moved to Western, and I have to say the city, Utica, because we just solved the mystery last month. When okay. we moved into our house, my son was about 4-ish, I think, and I had my other son. He was a baby. And Jimmy, out of nowhere, started having horrific nightmares, and they were God's honest truth. The first one he had was during the day when he was taking a nap, and I used to work 3 to 11 at the hospital. So my husband would come home from work, and then I would leave and go to work, and I'd put okay. the kids down for a nap before I left. So he comes screaming into the kitchen, and he says, "Mommy, Mommy, 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 tell the man in black with no head I don't want to go with him."
Oh. And I was like, "Did you start what?" thinking, oh, God, here we go again.
Snap.
Well, I had not, nobody ever said anything in front of him about how his father died, because he's yeah. too little. They're not going to yeah. understand.
Sure.
So, meaning that he shot and killed himself at that age. So what happened was, I was like, okay, that's got to be a coincidence. And it spooked me. And my husband came home and I said, "You're never going to believe this." And he's like, "What?" Well, one of the days my husband was putting him to bed. I guess he was asleep about an hour and a half. And he came running in and he said to my husband that the man with no head came back and he was trying to pull him out of bed to go with him. Mm. And I said, wow. "Oh, this is not good." And I did pick up on a little bit of a disturbance, but I couldn't, it was a familiar, but it wasn't strong like it was before. It was a familiar type of, I don't know, I did a sage smudging on the house, I blessed the house. Then mm-hmm. another time, it was about a month later, and the whole weird thing about this was, another truthful thing was, it transpired in June and July, which my husband died in June and was buried in July. And that was my husband who was like, you know, isn't this kind of like coinciding with time? And I'm like, this is a little odd. So the next time it happened with me, I actually called our priest. Now, our priest at the time in Utica, wonderful, wonderful man, ancient as the hills. but I have to say, when I called him, and he knew of what happened with my first husband, and he always really looked after Jimmy as far as, you know, I think he took him under his wing, and old priest, but he actually was so open-minded. He goes, "Jill," and he said my husband's name, he goes, "I really think we need to do an actual blessing on the house." He goes, "I don't like this." And I was like, that scared me, I think, more than anything.
mm.
And yeah. I was, again, trying to block things, but I'm like, well, we've blessed the house. We've done this. After Father blessed the house, it stopped. It did stop. Not another dream. That was it. So all these years, people have said, "Did you have a problem?" That was the only problem that I or my son ever had. I could not understand why, all the way to Utica, like 3 years after my husband died, this would happen, until doing research for the next book, something came up, and I was like, well, that's interesting, because there's a priest that I mentioned in quite detail in the upcoming book, and I make vague mention to at the end of 207. We had been talking just recently, and I said to Sarah, I said, you know, it's just never made sense why this whole Utica thing transpired, and then it stopped. It went away. It was like it was nipped in the bud properly from the start. Well, we're standing there looking at each other, and I can tell you this was like 3-4 weeks ago to tonight. And all of a sudden, we looked at each other, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. The priest that I discussed was actually, when he came from Ireland, was a priest at St. John's Church in Utica before he went to Watervliet. Coincidence? Okay. I don't know. But I think that's very strange.
Yeah.
I don't know if it has anything to do with it. It's just one of these big question marks. I mean, I don't know. It's odd. But that's the only problem we've ever had. He's never had, you know, I've had a lot of people, and I've done a lot of, you know, reading about this and talking to people in the field about it, about pregnancy with, you know, doing investigations or being around highly active areas. And I was concerned about that. But I have to tell you, I didn't go to bed without rosary beads in my hand. And really, I haven't touched them, in all honesty, meaning as faithfully as I did when I was living in that house then. Because actually, it reminds me, when I see rosary beads, it just, I tense up, only for the fact that, I mean, I've held them, and I have my mom's and so on and so forth, but to say it as, I can't even explain the energy that I put into it just to protect Jimmy and I, even when I was pregnant, living in that house, it was scary.
I'll stop posting pictures of mine on Facebook then.
No. I can. That's not the issue. But
I know I'm teasing.
To go and say that the rosary, it's just all I can think of is getting in my rocking chair and
an association.
Really praying to God to protect my son and I.
And them.
So
pregnant women tend to be real emotional, and I speak from, you know, experience. So why do you think that Jim was susceptible, and yet you, who were pregnant, was not?
Well, again, the drinking, and, you know, the gateway, I really do think that's it. I think that for sure, because I have spoken to, and this will come out in the next book, but I have spoken to a former tenant who fled there before we moved in. And there, I think the mindset and a fractured psyche, whether it be, you know, there's some type of fracture there, whether it's the drinking or drugs or whatever. And with him, I would say it was definitely the drinking, but in combination with occasionally smoking marijuana, it may have been just enough to weaken him, to the point where, according to what we were told, and again, this is all backwards, as our priest explained, and our priest knew him from the time he was a little boy. It's something that he does feel was an oppression. And the turning point came late fall, early winter, 88 going into 89, and there was a point of no return.
But don't you – do? And maybe this is my misunderstanding. First of all, I'm not Catholic. I come from, you know, a Catholic family, so I have a somewhat of a background in Catholicism, but not real strong. But don't demonic – possessions occur only if someone actually in some way invites that in, or do I have that wrong?
To my knowledge, it's really a weakened individual, and some people, and it's not just Catholicism, there are many other religions that, you know, will have a slightly different thought about it, but sometimes it is about the person. If you invite something in, that's definitely, you know, you're asking for trouble. But I can tell you he would never have invited it in, but I have to say the energy in that house was oppressive. I've never seen, and the weirder part about it was the front of the house was completely different than the back of the house. The back of the house, you could still feel it, but the front of the house, especially the living room area, was awful, 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 awful. And whatever it was, and the males in the areas with the research that I've done, the males have had a terrible time fighting this. Now, I had initially questioned when I started to have to decide whether to end 207 or continue it and make it a ginormous book, or to just leave it at my experience when I had opened up this can of worms investigating what was going on current day in sure. the area, it quickly became a little unnerving to find out that there were a lot of male suicides in that yeah. very small area. Now, to me, I was thinking that that was pretty much because possibly the men were, you know, I'm thinking, trying to think of the whole, what could possibly be the reason why it's men.
Sure.
And I really thought that it was because, and not to be stereotypical, but because men really have been looked at, especially going back to, you know, even 20 years ago, as being the breadwinners, the ones that really carry the stress on the family shoulder, you know, the stress on their shoulders about the family and so on and so forth. So I was thinking, well, maybe that's why, because they're so stressed out because they're, you know, trying to be the manly man and take care of everybody.
Sure.
And they don't want to look at these other things, and they, you know,
Are you saying what I hear you saying, and I could be wrong, is that you feel that there's a stoicism there that doesn't allow them to look at these things? Is that what I hear you saying?
Well, no, I'm not really. But I mean, from I was trying to figure out why are there so many male suicides now?
Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just agreeing with you. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, so was I.
So here I'm trying to figure out what could be the reason, and this is then going into the history of the land and what's transpired over time, and then I'm like, oh my gosh, this is definitely, it's land related. That's why I'm going to say I'm 99% sure, because I don't want to say 100% because there, sure. there's no way to prove it, right. other than it's highly, highly likely. But we're talking layers of really bad events transpiring in a small geographic location, and then come to find out that it was just explained to me that the, well, in the not so distant past, that males, from a biblical perspective and Judeo-Christian perspective, are the seeds of, carry the seeds of life, and anything demonic is set to destroy beginnings, and really, and especially the Catholic Church, looked at when they do investigations and so on and so forth for possessions, and they look at the prevalence of the male, because according to religious doctrine and whatnot, this demonic energy tends to target men because they carry the seeds of life, and it's kind of like putting an end to it. And it's very yeah. weird when you think of it like that.
But you know what, though? I have noticed that whenever you read, like, books or watch television shows or whatever of these, you know, true hauntings or whatever, it always seems to be like the guy is like, no, 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 this stuff can't possibly be, this stuff doesn't exist, and it's just sort of making their wives and children feel like liars. And it's really funny because it's sort of the opposite with my wife and I. It's not that she makes me feel like a liar or anything, but she's the one that's a little bit more stoic and a little bit more skeptical. But I've grown up with this my entire life, whereas she hasn't. And funny story, one time we were in a local Target, and you know, I don't really talk about my abilities that much on the air, but I will, you know, every once in a while. And we're walking around Target, and I get a guy named Mike who just comes up and starts, you know, chattering in my ear. You know, and it's like,
"Go away, Mike, I'm shopping."
Yeah, I said to my wife, it's like, she's looking at me, she's like, "What is your problem?" She knows when I get this look on my face that there's something nearby. Mm-hmm. And I say, "Oh, I got Mike here right now, and he wants to come home with us." And she's like, "Don't you ever get tired of doing this stuff?" And it's like, "No, I can't really turn it off and turn it back on whenever I feel like."
So you might as well not be ticked about it.
Exactly. So it's like, you know, but and it's funny because it's like it really is the opposite with that. But you do see that a lot where it's like the men are supposed to be the stoic ones. They're the breadwinners. They're the strong ones. But I just think that that's sort of a, you know, kind of a millions of years worth of social conditioning that's involved there.
Absolutely.
I agree. I totally agree. And the interesting thing was, and this really was, it blew my mind, you know, really, just finding out, oh, it was the end of September or October, beginning of October. It was right before I went to New York. All of 15 male suicides. 15.
That goes way beyond, chance.
It is great. And this is legit. I had two that I vetted out were not legit. These 15 are legitimate. Now, the weirder part of this, and I'm not going to say the name out of respect for anybody but this individual, it was brought to my attention. I received an email from someone who lost a very dear friend in Waterville back in the early 2000s. That's all I'm going to say as far as time frame. Mm-hmm. But if you Googled information, you could find out, but I'm not going to direct this conversation in that. But she said, I've heard of a lot of these male suicides. She had quite a few names that I have on my list. And some of them go back quite a ways. But in any event, she said, I lost my best friend, and she was a girl. And I was like, by suicide? And she said, yes. And I said, where? In the church parking lot.
Oh, my goodness.
And I did confirm it. Now, it was a very... I don't want to say too much as far as out of respect for the family, but there are some very interesting ties again to that church, and it is the only female suicide that I'm aware of. So there are 16 suicides, one female, 15 male. Out of them, and she asphyxiated herself, but she also cut herself. The males, 14 or 13, they're all gunshot with one hanging and then one unconfirmed hanging. Now, in the house 207 itself, about 30 years before my husband committed suicide, there was a man in our apartment in the same room that shot and killed himself that I found out about in the book I talked, the first book I mentioned this towards the end, and I was quite upset about this. But he died before we moved in, which is what I think was the male that I was picking up on that I knew had passed. But then also there is an unconfirmed, and this is the unconfirmed hanging. I was told that an individual, a male, hung himself between the third and second floors in the center hallway. And a retired policeman from Waterville states that's exactly what happened, and he helped pull him down. I cannot confirm that. But here we have, in just the house alone, and then my husband's best friend did not kill himself in the house. He had been hanging out at the house, sitting in the house in the dark after my husband died for several weeks, months actually, 3 months. And he went home one night and shot and killed himself. So with 207, there are two definite male suicides in the house. There is an unconfirmed hanging in the house, male, and then there is husband's best friend. Now, our other friend, who I mentioned in the book that had the bad dreams, that was said he was forced almost out the window on the second floor into the street while he was sleeping on our couch a few times, he refused to go back in the house. So there was a target, as I can only say, 4207, that was definitely geared towards men.
Okay, hang on a second. All right, and I'm going to say this. This is creepy, it goes well beyond chance. Is there any historical documentation that either the place is
before you ask that question, Rick?
Yeah.
Before you ask that question, we're actually 4 minutes past our break time.
Yeah.
Can we take our break and then you hold that question, you write it down, because if you're like me, you'll forget it before we get back otherwise.
Okay.
And so, Jill, is that okay? We'll go to break. When we come back, Rick can ask that question. You can answer us. And then also, I'd like to talk about this upcoming book and documentary.
Absolutely.
Sound good? Okay, so stick around, everybody. We're going to take a break. This is Paranormal Underground on Paranormal Underground Radio on Z Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
If you are a small business owner, you are paying too much for products and services. Do not spend your hard-earned cash on items you can get on trade. UTXTrade.com was formed specifically so you can trade your products or services with other companies on the network for items like advertising, computer repair, office furniture, printing, hotel stays, and much more. For more information, please visit UTXTrade.com. That's UTXTrade.com, a proud sponsor of Paranormal League of America.
In her riveting novel, Break in the Beyond, writer Kim Casey brings to life a supernatural tale filled with mystery, humor, and intrigue. Kim's suspenseful story focuses on Risa, a compassionate social worker who assists Owen, a young psychiatric patient. Is a 300-year-old entity speaking through Owen, or does he simply possess multiple personalities? Visit awningpublishing.ca to order your copy of Breaking the Beyond. That's A-H-N-E-E-N publishing.ca.
What do you do when you're lonely on a Saturday night? You can join me and listen to the two hottest guys on ztalkradio.com. Joe and Kale, The Skeptical Edge, Saturdays, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Your assignment is to listen to The Buzz on Monday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Central on ztalkradio.com. This message will self-destruct.
This is Dave from the Dave Matthews Band for Rad. When you go out and party, get drunk, then drive, you're not only loaded, you're a loaded weapon. When you celebrate, designate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives and so should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Rad, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Thank you.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. We're back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. For the last hour or so, we've been having a fascinating conversation with a returning guest, Jill Marie Morris, concerning her book, 207, A Personal Account of Love, Paranormal Phenomenon, and Demonic Possession. Jill Marie is actually now considered a frequent flyer on Paranormal Underground. So, Jill Marie Morris, thank you for sticking around for another segment.
Oh, thank you very much for having me back. I always enjoy talking with you all.
Oh, definitely. I mean, we like our frequent flyers. But I did have a question before we went on break, and
before
I wanted
Karen
to say
to rudely interrupted.
Yeah, what the hell, Karen? No, it's okay. Now, for me to say that something is creepy, it must be really bizarre. My whole life has been nothing but surrounded by creepy stuff. But now all these suicides go so far beyond chance that there must be something there that is causing it. Now, were you able to do any kind of historical background on this land where this home sat? Was the land cursed? I mean, anything that could cause this kind of bizarre, creepy activity?
Yes, and it was all done again backwards. It's like I said, it's been such an eye-opening, yet really at times souring experience. And I say souring because I've had to, speak with and get these accounts from family members that have reached out to me to tell me of their loved ones that have committed suicide and the commonality between the patterns of behavior, identical. We're talking, there is not just one class of people that it's affected. It's not one age group. It's predominantly, obviously, men. But the similarities are, hardworking. You've got retired people. You've got younger people. You've got middle-aged people. It's just, it's really sad. But yes, with the research, like I said, when I first reached out to the Rite Aid Pharmacy people, in the spring of 2011, before I finished writing 207, I had a feeling several times after these incidents transpired and my husband passed of driving by the old house before it was torn down, I knew something was wrong. And there have been times where it's waxed and waned that I picked up on different levels of intensity just driving by. I won't step on the lot. But I have walked through the parking lot and around the lot where the house was.
You don't need to step on it sometimes.
No, no,
yeah,
no. Wouldn't do that. If somebody came down and said, here's even $50, I wouldn't do it. But in any event, what had happened was when they first told me, without any knowledge of what had transpired at 207, because the house was torn down when they built the pharmacy, when they started telling me what they had encountered, I knew right then and there I was right. I knew my kids had grown up, at different times driving by saying, this is really bad, this is stronger. So for them to say it without knowing the history really made me realize a few things. Now, talk about coincidence. There happened to be a paranormal investigator that works there who had been recording EVPs for 4 years before I even called the store because of phenomena that had been transpiring. So I said, well, this is interesting. Then after I had spoken with her, they were allowed to do some EVPs in the break room on their breaks. And I did not give them information, specifics about different things, because I wanted it to be objective, meaning I wanted to see what they found out. I didn't want to feed them the information. And when they came back with some of the EVPs, I was like, holy cow, okay. So that was really my deciding factor. And then a couple people came forward and said, my family members, this happened almost identically as with your husband. And I was like, okay, I've got to end this here because this is a whole nother book. So with the research, I found out that back in the 1600s, when before the settlers came in, it was a very large area from the Port Schuyler, which is just a hair south of Watervliet, up to the Cohoes Falls, which is just north of Watervliet, was considered a Native American sacred meeting ground for many tribes in the New England, upstate New York area, well, New York area, and they would all converge because of the, they really felt that the falls and the river, that whole area was very special. Mm-hmm. And there was a slaughter of several hundred Native Americans that were killed and left unmourned. And this is from the head of the Indigenous people for New York State.
And now, were they all males?
He didn't say. He just said several hundred Native Americans were massacred.
Okay.
And left there unmourned. And apparently, even though I have some Native American in me, there is quite a custom for mourning the deceased. And this was ignored. So he said right then and there, he knew something was up. He was intrigued. He actually, it was a roundabout way that we got a hold of each other. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, boy, that really says a lot. And as my grandmother had always told me, the Native American people, when you hear of a sacred space or a gathering space, people think, oh, it's happy, it's positive. Well, not necessarily so. There can be attributes which the Native Americans, being very spiritual, would want to feed a negative energy area with positive things and turn it into an area to celebrate, to, if you will, feed it good energy, to turn the energy. So a sacred space does not always connotate happiness and good things prior to it. Could be have been picked up because of bad things, and it was right. They were trying to turn it around.
Right.
So that transpired. Several hundred, he said, were massacred and left there, right in that area. Then when the canal system opened up on the Hudson River, there was, you know, you've got industrialization taking place right there along the riverbank, Troy and West Troy, as it was known, Watervliet. 23rd Street was the cutoff for the Erie Canal, where these canal people would get their paychecks and go squander their money. You know, there was prostitution, there were brothels, there were 72 bars in Watervliet in the 1800s.
Wow.
Now, it's 72. And it was known as Murder Town because it was extremely violent. The Albany Capitol Police in the 1800s could not even keep police present in Watervliet. It was too dangerous. So it was a free-for-all. And this is all in the archives. This is, anybody could go to the Hall of Records on Tivoli Street in Albany and look this information up. So here I'm finding out there were people that were just left in Potter's Field to die because there was nobody to control the people, the canal people. Right. And there actually, an interesting story was, there was a man who made a profession collecting $5 per body, fishing them out of the Hudson River, or pulling them off the street and getting them out of footway, if you will. And his nickname was Spot because he could spot dead bodies.
Nice.
And that he is in the archives. This person is.
It's quite a talent.
Quite a talent.
I can spot him a mile away.
Exactly. Yeah. But this is the history. This is the layer effect of what has taken place in this exact area. And then you have, in the mid-1800s, and this is what has prevented me from ending St. Sinners and Sacred Ground because of all the hubbub, and this is, again, you can Google this information. The church 300 feet west of 207's lot, St. Patrick's Church, is closed. It's been closed since September. Mm-hmm. And there has been a big controversy because the preservationists wanted it to be preserved and maintained as a historical landmark for the city. But the church is tearing it down because it's too costly to maintain, and they've consolidated the diocese and whatnot. And it has been a big struggle. It is going to be, it has been officially rezoned to become a supermarket, a very large New England chain, Price Chopper. Okay. Now, in 207, I mentioned the man in black on Christmas Eve. And this is all backwards research. But I had always wondered why the only apparition that I had actually seen was Christmas Eve, and there was this big, and I was talking to Sarah about this too again, you know, I don't know what time we put up the tree on Christmas Eve. It could have been after midnight. I am not sure. All I know, it was Christmas Eve when that apparition appeared, and he was dressed in black. I will never, ever, ever, as long as I am alive, forget what I saw. And I knew it was something older, like an older spirit. I knew he was, there was something very dualistic about him. Long story short, I just couldn't understand why this negative, nasty spirit was showing up on Christmas Eve in front of my Christmas tree. Well, I knew it. My grandmother, being psychic all her life, God bless her soul, she had always thought from the start the church had something to do with it. She couldn't quite pinpoint it, but she always thought it had something to do with the church. Now, with that said, I'm doing research for the second book with a very good friend of mine, Justin Sanders, who I've mentioned several times and written about. That's his thing. He is a historian. And he said, Jill, if you ever saw a picture of that man, would you know? I said, absolutely, and I really hope I never do. This was a couple years ago. Well, this is after 207's really, so it's about a year and a half ago. He's sending me these pictures, and he goes, look at this one. I'm like, nope, doesn't mean anything. Next one, nope. This next picture, I literally cried. It scared the ever-loving daylights out of me. That's when I realized it was the priest who founded the main St. Patrick's on 19th Street and Father Sheehan in Waterville.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was him. And I'll tell you, I hadn't seen that since I had seen the apparition. Well, with that name, the odd thing was, another piece comes to fruition here of being solved, was the first Mass at St. Patrick's was held on Christmas Day. Now, again, wow. Whole weird coincidence.
I have to stop you here. Do you really believe in coincidence?
No. I always have to try and figure things out, and I always have to give the benefit of the doubt. But that's where I say this is just so strange, and it really shook me to the point I was shaking and crying, because I had hoped to God I'd never seen that man's face again, quite frankly. And so with that, I find out that the first Mass of the church was on Christmas Day. Now, the Golden Jubilee, my husband died June 28th. The Golden Jubilee for the church was scheduled for July 3rd or 4th. They ended up, there was something that went on in something got switched around, and it ended up June 28th was the change date, again, related to the church. That's the date my husband died. July 3rd was the date he was buried. This whole weird thing with the church's Jubilee. So that's where I'm saying, you know, this is, you just mentioned, do you really believe in coincidence? This is, it's so damn bizarre. There's no other way to put it.
Can't even try to, I wouldn't you even can't, want to
you
explain
can't,
it.
You can't. Yeah. And other people have had some very strange things happen that correlate with very unique dates to the church. Now, just recently, over the summer, Justin sends me some information because he's been tremendously helpful with this research. He goes, Jill, the bell at the top of the church. He goes, you know what's inscribed on the church bell? And I'm like, no, I didn't even think about that, to be completely honest with you. I didn't even give the church bell any thought other than it's the church bell. Well, come to find out, Father Sheehan had inscribed on the Mealy Bell, and you can Google this. It's in Latin, but the translation is, we must all, and I'm paraphrasing here, all must kneel before, I think it's before God as well as the underworld. You'll figure it out if you Google this. You can find
why
it.
Why would
out.
It say as why? Well as the underworld?
Yes, it does. Honest to God, it does.
But why, though? Does this guy have like a dualistic religion or something?
He was very much fascinated with mysticism.
Okay.
And that's where St. Patrick's Cathedral was. He built that and modeled it after the church in Lourdes, France, which a lot of people are not, they think Lourdes, France, oh, it's you know, Catholic and miracles, and it's not Catholic, actually. It's based on mysticism.
Mm-hmm.
And he was fascinated with this church, and he actually went there. And that's, again, this stuff is in the historical records. And so there is definitely something extremely odd about him, and there are other things that, you know, that are discussed in great detail in the next book that just make you say, I've had people, when I was up in New York and I had that event about the documentary just this October 26th, people said, well, are you saying, you know, the church is, the priest is bad or whatever? You know what? I don't think the priest was bad to begin with. I don't think the priest, you know, I can't confirm or deny anything other than what I'm getting from the record and right. whatnot. But I do think he felt susceptible to the prevalence of whatever is on the land. I mean, the church is 300 feet west of the house.
But now here's what I wonder, though. I mean, it's like, okay, you have all these suicides. Did you go back and check and see if, you know, the town of Watervliet as a whole, did that town have an incredible amount of suicides or bizarre deaths or anything of that nature?
Not actually. I have. I've been in contact with the coroner's office and for Albany County, and okay. they cannot give certain information out, obviously.
Sure.
But what I can say is public information is public information, and it is a small area that has had a tremendous, very unusually high amount of male suicides. I mean, yeah. and again, this is not an area that is like, you're not talking about a ghetto. You're not talking about, you know, and I hate to say that and sound snide about it, but you're not talking about an impoverished area. You're talking about a very interesting dynamic of people that come from white collar professionals to hardworking blue collar people to
sure.
retired yeah. people. There is no one that factor other than changes come about and these men snap. Even the people in the drugstore have had a problem with some employees in a 5-year period of time snapping and attacking people.
Wow.
They fired 4 to 5 people in a very short period of time for just snapping. And that's exactly what I would describe my husband as doing. Just totally. Especially after this turning point that took place, there was definitely a transition with him. And once it became physical and became very aggressive, this, he would just snap. And this is exactly what's gone on even in the store in the past.
Wow.
So it's weird.
There's got to be a definite correlation between all of this creepy, bizarre weirdness to what happened there many, many centuries ago. It's.
I agree.
Got to be a correlation there.
And you know, some people have said, "Well, you know, is it the Native Americans?" And I just have to say, as I'm going to speak now as a psychic medium, and again, I don't even like talking about my stuff either, like Rick, you had mentioned before, and that's a mm-hmm. whole other topic for another day. But in any event, my gut feeling is this has existed long before the massacre. I think that yeah. this has been there for probably forever. I just think it's a very sore spot on the planet. I really do.
Well, huh. it just seems to me like with every ancient religion and every ancient society that they all have talk, of course, of supernatural beings that mean that are usually very indifferent towards us and don't really want to have anything to do with us, but every now and then they're provoked. And I would say, I mean, and of course you can call them demons or whatever,
right.
but I would definitely say that whatever is on this ground was provoked and brought forth by that huge massacre, and his now is just, pardon my French, tearing the shit out of Watervliet. And I mean, it's got to be a definite correlation there. Something is not like people being on that land.
There is. I had a woman who is almost 80 years old, and I would say her name, but I didn't ask. I didn't even think this would come up. But she's on Facebook, so if she's listening, she'll, you know, and she wants to say hi at some point, she can announce it on my Facebook page. But she came up to me, never met her before. She came up to me. She had read the book. She goes, I have to tell you, Jill, this was just this past October. She goes, my whole life I've lived in Waterville, and I refuse to walk on that side of the street. She goes, but from the church down to 207, she goes, I've always been terrified of that area. She's almost 80 years old.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the church, I have to say, the saddest part about this is from a historical perspective, that church and Father Sheehan turned around that community from being uncivilized to civilized. It really, and that is in the historic records. As odd as it was, it really was the turning point for the city to become civilized. Now, from a spiritual perspective, I really do think something was done. This mysticism fascination, he may have had some type of fracture where it just precipitated. When he got there, things went sideways. And that's why this weird bell inscription is there. The Albany Times Union, actually, I can't remember the columnist name, also questioned he was like, why is this inscription on this bell? And from a tonal perspective for the church bell, as it was described to me, that the church bell sets the precedence for the village. I'm not just talking about Waterville, I'm talking about any church bell. And this is, like I said, I'm finding this out after the fact.
Right.
So here you have this inscription, and most bells and cornerstones to the churches have inscriptions. This bell has rung over the city for, over a century.
Yeah.
And it's got this bizarre inscription on it. It's just one of these stranger than fiction, scarier than fiction stories. And it's true. I mean, you can verify, mostly except for the suicide cases. There are some people a few that have allowed me to use their names, and then I can change the names on the other ones, which I did out of respect for privacy. But, people have talked about it, and some of it is, if you look hard enough, you will find it in the public information, but neither here nor there. It's verifiable, but that's why I say it soured me in a way. In all honesty, I want the book to be done. I want the documentary done in a way that's going to remain intact and have the integrity to preserve the facts and the history. I don't want them embellished. I don't want this turned into an Amityville horror. That's why I want it done as a documentary, because there's a tremendous amount of education that can come from this, and that's really my goal.
Sure.
So,
with hearing of Watervliet, it almost reminds me of Dudleytown in Connecticut. Yeah, which was another town that was incredibly cursed, and there was a large amount of suicides and a large amount of bizarre occurrences that, was closely related to something that happened there long before, white dudes came on the land. And it just seems that there are different places around the world and around our country that basically spiritually unhealthy.
Exactly. And that is something, and that's where my beef goes, if I could say my beef goes, relative to why I get really upset with everybody wanting to say everything is demonic. Rushing to this, and I really, and everybody will tell you that truly knows me as a friend and as a person, day to day, I struggled. I had to get my story out for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept it to the point. I've had people say, well, why didn't you make the book longer? Well, first of all, I'm not going to embellish it. The truth is the truth, and I'm not going to fill it with things to make it more dramatic or to make it sell. It is what it is. That's where TV comes into mind, where this whole mindset with, this, and this. But what I will say is that there needs to be more respect for these things, because really, again, people start playing with stuff and wanting to provoke things to see what happens. And you are messing with something you don't ever, ever, ever want to get involved in.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, it's I hear a lot of people that are like, oh man, I was at this investigation and just something just scratched the heck out of me. And my first question always is, were you doing any kind of provoking? And they're like, yeah. And I just say, you know what? You deserved it.
Yeah.
That's
my philosophy too.
Yeah. Don't be provoking things. Don't be summoning things. Don't ask the devil to come up and expect him to play nice. It just doesn't work that way.
Are they wrecking this church? Are they actually tearing it down?
They will start it. The interior or the gizzards of it, as I've said in the past, have already started to come out. They're selling different altar pieces. And
boy, I wouldn't want a piece of that church in my house.
No. Well, you had the Fibic box.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the interesting thing is it is supposed to, one of the priests is going to be in the documentary, who has been involved with the church, and he knows about the book, the situation, the whole nine yards, and it's very interesting, his perspective. And, he has been very, although him and the preservationists have butted heads, I have to say it's hard to remain neutral from a journalistic perspective, and that's where I struggle spiritually versus historically with the church itself.
Sure.
But the priest, I have to say, has been very good about divulging specific information. And I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for the stance that the preservationists have. I commend them on their passion because, again, from a historical perspective, it was the turning point for that city. But you've got a lot of people that have fled their homes. I just found out about not too long ago two brothers in law enforcement that lived in an apartment in Waterville that broke their lease and hightailed it out because they couldn't deal with what was going on in their house. So, and I've got elderly people. I've got an 87-year-old man who has come to see me at one of my signings in New York that lived in Waterville, and very devout Catholic man. And he has said from the start, ever since he was a little boy growing up there, he knew something was wrong with that area. So you've got, and then, it's just interesting how generationally there seems to be these stories that come out that have been told through their family generations. That's another thing that I discuss in the book is there are a couple of families that have had really tremendously unsettling paranormal activity dating back to the late 1800s that have been handed down. Right. It got to the point where one of the families in the last 25 years had to make a decision to keep the house or get it out of the family and sell it because all of this activity kept transpiring for multiple generations, and they ended up for the first time selling it to someone that was not a family member.
Wow.
So lots of activity.
Wow. Well, it's quite a story. So when can we expect the new book?
My goal is April. And
know how those are.
Yeah,
I know. And I've had, I have to mention Justin again, because we had a little chat about this the other day. There is some information that I have actually, I'm going to be receiving probably within, I'm hoping by the end of December. And I don't want to say what it is because it is it's a big, big possible puzzle piece here. And it's come from recent information. And if you say things happen for a reason, it's probably why Price Chopper has held me up with not knowing what was going to happen with the church before I ended the book. But I want to get this piece of information and know that this book is done and over with, because in all honesty, I don't want to revisit it. Meaning from the perspective of writing a supplement to catch people up, or because this information came after. But April, I'm hoping by the end of April it will be done. It's supposed to go to edit in January.
Cool.
Okay, awesome.
All right, very good. And how about the documentary?
Documentary, we're going to start filming in January, and there have been some changes with that. I am doing this. I have help from different people that want to be involved. And it's going to be a slow process because of funding. And that's fine, because what will be, and it will be done the way it should be done. And that's, I mean, what can you say? If I want the integrity to stay there, I don't, you know, even if a major production crew was to fly down and say, oh, you know, we'll save the day, and I would still ask the same thing. I do not want this to turn into the Amityville Horror. I don't. Waterville sure. is a great family community. It really is. There, my mother has lived there. My brother has lived there. I have lived there. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. I've lived there for that in that house. But many friends of mine live there, and in no way is it to taint or give the city a bad reputation. This is just about, again, educating people and making them aware of how very much history in the spirit world impacts land and space. Sure. It comes together, and you can't deny it, especially in this case. You really, truly can't.
No, so, it goes beyond chance.
It's an amazing story. And, of course, people can pick up 207 as well. And where can people buy that?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble online, as well as Books a Million online. If you want to, you can order it from my website. Actually, I'm revamping my website, so that's going to be hopefully done this weekend. I've completely, with this whole paranormal thing and on another topic, I've made some personal changes the past couple of weeks. I will have it available again to order directly through the website if you want a signed copy. But Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and BooksAMillion.com.
Okay, and your Sounds website good. Address is?
JillMarieMorris.com, www.JillMarieMorris.com.
And is there anywhere else where people can catch up with you?
Facebook, on the website, once it's done this weekend, I will have the little link you can hook up on Facebook. And I have stopped tweeting, I have to say. And again, that's going with me revamping things. I have had to reevaluate different scenarios and really be true to myself. And so I'm not sure if I'm going to go back on Twitter just yet.
So, oh, fair enough.
And my radio show is, I'm in talks with someone helping me out with that. I think I am only going to go to once a month on the radio show, once every Sunday. That will be actually decided in the next 2 weeks. It's with the filming of the documentary, a lot of these things come to priority. Is what it is.
Sure.
Sure. Of course.
Well, no, you have to do the things that are the most important to you, and you're only human.
Yep.
You can only do so much. I run across this quite a great deal in my real life. So, you know, exactly. I get it. I have lots going on too. So I understand completely. Well, as always, it's just amazing to have you come on the show. I love talking to you.
Thank you, Jill.
Yeah. And people pick up the book 207 by Jill Marie Morris, and visit her website, JillMarieMorris.com. Stay tuned, because the new book is, say the name of the new book again.
Saints, Sinners, and Sacred Ground.
Oh, I like it. It's very alliterative.
Yeah.
Yep. And nice. I really appreciate speaking with all of you tonight again. It's always wonderful to catch up and chat about these things, and I really appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, when you get closer with your book and with the documentary, you come on back, okay?
I will do that. Thank you so much, everybody. Take care and happy holidays.
Yeah, too, happy Jill. Holidays. That's Jill Marie Morris, everybody. She's always a great guest. And Rick, that story, I mean, I've heard it before. Uh-huh. And I've read not the entire book, but bits and pieces of the book. And it just gets me in the gut. Holy cow.
Well, it does me. And it's like when I picked up her book to read it, you know, again, talking about my personal abilities, I could really feel the intensity just from holding the book. You know, I've never had anything quite like that before. So it was it's definitely a very intense story and worth reading.
Yep.
Thank you.
Definitely. Thank you, Jill.
Take care, Jill.
Good night. So, Cheryl.
Hey, gang.
We have a
schedule.
We do have a schedule. Yes, we have something.
I was along struggling that, for yeah, the word those lines. Because, you know, as you know, I'm getting old.
Yeah, senility setting in.
I've noticed that, Karen. No,
yeah,
just kidding.
It's
just
pretty
kidding.
Frightening, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Hey, before I talk about the schedule, I want to thank Jill Marie Morris for coming
absolutely
back and talking to us again.
Yeah,
she's fantastic, and she's inspirational, and her story is amazing on many different levels. I have also read her book, and I highly recommend it to anybody listening. 207, and it's an incredibly intense book, and
it's incredibly intense, true story.
True story, sad, but also there's something in there that, yes, while it's very disturbing, there's inspiration that comes out of it through Jill's perseverance in the end, and I think that is really something that's pretty amazing.
So, yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
it's just too bad that she had to endure. That kind of abuse,
it's unimaginable
from
to me.
Her husband,
yeah.
And it is unimaginable,
yeah.
And especially as a dad, I never could think, fathom the idea of grabbing a shotgun and pointing it
exactly
in
so
face. I mean, geez,
what does that tell you about how far gone he was?
Yeah,
yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah,
because Jill Marie is a lovely person, and she seems to have incredibly good judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think she's going to pick somebody who is going to stick a shotgun in her face. I mean, so something happened.
Yeah, there's definitely some kind of activity there. Either some kind of ancient force that just decided to pick on the area, or there was the direct correlation between this Native American massacre that happened there. But whatever happened in that area of Watervliet, New York is quite terrifying.
Yeah, it really is.
So.
And I appreciate her care and caution in telling the story in a responsible way, because I feel like a lot of haunted stories or demonic stories or stories of the paranormal are told irresponsibly in a way that doesn't foster respect for the people involved, respect for the communities, respect for the spirits involved. And I feel like she's very careful in how she's choosing to tell her story, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, and that being said, I'm very interested in seeing the final product of Jill's documentary, and I'm really pulling for her to get it made in the way that she wants it to be made.
Amen, sister friend.
Yay.
Okay.
All right, we have some good stuff coming up.
Yeah, we do.
We do, okay. Yeah. Next week, we have two guests, actually, and they are both authors. The first guest is Chad Shimke. He is an author based out of San Francisco, and he writes novels and short stories. He pens character-driven fiction that explores crime, occult, fantasy, and other such stories. And some of his titles are called Picker, Pieces, Walker, and Weirder. And that should be interesting, a little bit different interview there. And then the second hour, we have Kristen Ann. And Kristen Ann is an author of a very interesting book that I just finished called Exploring Sacred Space, A Vast Quest.
I'm reading it now.
Read it now. I really actually
have
because
you're anxious to discuss it with me.
I'm so anxious.
You're like, what, you haven't finished
it? I emailed Karen the other day, and I'm like, let's talk. But yeah, I know
yeah,
you're busy.
Yeah, I'm
but
still reading it.
Yeah, we need to talk after you read it because it's very interesting. It takes it a different look on what possibly the end of the Mayan calendar could mean, as opposed to, say, the end of the world. And I don't want to give it away, but there's some really interesting theories.
Should I stock up on canned goods?
No need for that. Okay. No need for that.
Do I need ammunition?
No.
Will anyone want to eat my brains?
No.
Okay. Is there going to be a vast spiritual awakening?
Quite possibly.
Will there be an earthquake?
Could be, but I'm not sure.
All right. I guess that's all I read it, that's it. That's all I get.
It's a very, I wish I could just come out and say it. I don't want to ruin the book though, so I'm not going to say it, but she shares a lot of her experiences over the years of investigating the spiritual side of life as well as some other interesting areas. And so we'll get to ask her lots of good questions next week, and I'm excited about that. Well, I'll give you guys my questions to ask her. But
I understand that Rick recently secured a rather exciting guest.
He did. Hey, Rick, you want to give it up?
Yeah. January 3rd, we're going to have Christopher St. Booth on the show.
Very nice.
Yeah, I want to say thank you to Jenny Gurney, who is, you know, she's friends with him. And she gave me his email, and, you know, I emailed him, and, you know, he's going to come on the show. So I have always been a fan of the Booth brothers. I think that they take the subject matter and they treat it with respect, and they treat the people living as well as dead with a great deal of compassion. And you know, these are guys that you can that are in the entertainment side of this of the paranormal field, and you can respect them because they know what they're talking about. They know the subject matter. They know what they're doing. And you know, it'll be great to be able to talk to somebody like that.
Very good. I'm looking forward to that. So good job,
definitely,
Rick.
Definitely.
And thanks, Jenny Gurney.
Yes, thank you, Jenny.
Yeah. So Cheryl had Chad and I give her our lists of like our top 10. Mm-hmm. How's that coming? Top 10 fantasy guests.
Slowly.
I gave her some too.
I will say that Christopher St. Booth was one of the ones on
your list, Karen. And you know what? Just so happened, Rick had emailed a few days before you gave us that list about them.
Look at that. See, there's no such thing as coincidence.
Mm-hmm. I know, right? So, but all of the rest, we're not having the same kind of luck.
Not so far.
All right. Well, that's good to know.
I'm not giving up.
We should get Lloyd back on soon too.
Yeah,
and maybe
it's been forever.
Kath, too, because you know I always like to talk parapsychology with the big guns.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I would love that. Talking to both of them is always fascinating.
I know.
You know what I like about the both of them? They're like me. They're not afraid to declare themselves as being nerds. So it's totally cool. I totally respect that about
those
two guys.
We like nerds.
I'm a geek groupie.
Yeah.
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 That's good.
I like geeks.
You know what? Since you like geeks, I mean, you know, I meant that very nicely. But I am like a UFO geek. I like UFO stories and tales and all that. And we're going to have a cool guest on December 13th.
Okay.
We're going to have Frank R. Santariga. Oh my God, I don't know if I pronounce his name right. I hope so.
Probably not.
Because I always mess it up. Mm-hmm. But he's a UFO researcher and author of a book called Paranormal Family and Friends.
So we're going to talk some aliens.
Yeah, December 13th.
Yay. We haven't talked aliens since I think we had Dr. Katai on.
Yeah,
was that the last time we talked aliens?
Yeah, I think
when we had Ben Hansen on, we talked
I missed aliens. That one. That was when I was teaching Tanner to drive.
Oh, that's right.
By the way.
Nice guy. Super nice guy.
I'm talking to Ernie Alonso of Haunted Orange County. I believe we're going to have part two of the Ben Hansen interview. We're just talking about that now, getting that secure. Hopefully
he's going to come back on?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yay. My child's not going to ruin it for me after all.
Yeah, you'll actually get to talk to him this time, Karen.
Tanner, did you hear that? You ruined it for your mom.
No, you know what? That's not the only thing he's ruined for me. There are parts of me that he has wrecked. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay, I'll take your word for it, I guess.
He was a 9-pound baby, man, with a great big head. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, Karen.
Oh, my God.
Speaking of babies, before we go on with any upcoming stuff, your little guy's going to be 2 on Monday.
Yes.
What?
My little boy, my little future world's...
He's getting into a little man already.
I can't believe it.
The future world's greatest psychical researcher is going to be 2 on the 3rd.
Seems like he was just born.
Happy birthday to little Theo coming up here.
Thank you.
Little Theo. Happy birthday.
So, before I interrupted with that, were we done with upcoming things?
Oh, just a couple more announcements. The new magazine, the November-December 2012 issue, our last issue of our lives, will be online tomorrow. Just kidding. Just kidding. I don't believe that at all.
You know what? If the world should happen to blow up, we'll never even know about it.
See? It'll be fine. Right.
And then,
who cares?
Then, what if we haven't read the December 2012 issue of Paranormal Underground magazine yet? What a tragedy.
Yeah. Seriously. Read it right away. No, it will be online tomorrow.
It can't blow up for because sure. I will not die without having had a chance to talk to Ben Hansen. There.
Yep. Also, readers, listeners, whoever wants to check it out, go to paranormalunderground.net. And
people, Muppets, whoever, you know.
Yeah, Muppets count too. It'll be online tomorrow for sure by end of day, and it's a great issue. We're introing.
Except there's no Karen Brager in it, so
except for
I
that.
Really am probably not going to read it under protest.
Dang.
But there's
so
three of my stories in it.
Screw you.
And some new columns that we started, and they're really interesting.
I am excited about that. So, yeah, one of them is of somebody who consults with our team a lot, a gal named Michaela Rand, and you're going to like her.
She wrote two outstanding articles, and I'm just going to leave it at that and let everybody be surprised at what they're about and how good they are. So.
Yeah, definitely.
And as Rick said, he wrote a few pieces. One of them is about Popo Bawa. That's an interesting
Popo Bawa. That's just Popo like a Bawa. Name he made up. He was sitting there making his belly button talk, and that was what he came up with.
Bawa.
It's a rather scary creature, actually.
Yeah, that apparently
it's not Rick's belly button
in their sleep. No, so, he's kind of a scary guy.
Yeah.
Okay, if I say his name three times fast, is he going to show up?
Don't do it.
Well, looking in a mirror with a candle burning behind me,
you're going to have a one-eyed, red-haired monster looking right back at you.
Yeah.
Red-skinned, rather. Excuse me.
Yeah. I was going to say a one-eyed, red-haired monster. So what is it? You in an eye patch or something?
I don't have red hair. I'm not a ginger.
You're kind of reddish. You're a little red.
That's his eye. Yeah, it's
I think of you as a ginger.
I'm not a ginger. I have a soul, Karen.
That's so you say. All right. So we have just a couple minutes left.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, just the last two guests that I want to mention to round out December, we have on December 20th, the day before Doomsday, we have Chuck Gotsky, founder and lead investigator of In the Dark Investigations.
Well, and then we're going to talk to him before we die.
Before we die. Yeah, assuming we make it through the next day after that, we're going to talk to, on December 27th, David Jones, lead investigator of Project Paranormal, which Rick actually set that interview up for us.
Well, hopefully we live to speak to him.
I hope so.
I know.
I think we will.
But like I said, if the world should blow up that morning, who cares? Who gives a shit? Nobody's going to care. We're all dead. So, hey.
Okay, that's two S words in one show, Rick.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're setting a record tonight.
Two?
Or was it
two
three?
Even compare to Karen's F-bomb that she dropped
what?
That
I one F-bomb in my entire career.
That's not that bad.
Yeah,
and I believe that I was being extremely passionate about a topic at the time that it occurred.
Okay. That's why we let it slide.
That's right. So here's the deal. Okay. It's almost 8 o'clock. We've got Fox City's Paranormal coming up after us, so you need to stick around for that. We will be back next week with who?
With two authors. We have Chad Shimke and Kristen Ann, and both are going to be very interesting interviewees, and I can't wait to talk or to give you guys my questions for Kristen and Ann. So
we are going to talk about why we won't be dead by on December 21st, so that
excites
me.
But we may all be more spiritually aware.
That's right. And so if I am spiritually aware, what am I going to do with all that canned chili? It's just a question. So and all
you can't take it with you. Sorry.
And the ammo.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Okay. So we will be back next week at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, and the other times in the flyover states.
In the beautiful state of Illinois. The
flyover states. No, don't even speak the name of that state.
Oh my God, that's
harsh.
Wow, the evil that just like sort of dripped off your tongue there.
I know. It's probably because I'm sitting on a vortex of evil or something. Or the chili I ate for dinner. No, that's Chad. So.
Damn you, Illinois.
Damn you. I hate you, Illinois. No, I actually, one of the best weekends I ever spent was in Chicago. Okay, anyway. So,
I love Chicago.
Until next week, Paranormal Underground Radio and Z-Talk Radio. Everybody have a great night. Thank
Bye.
You.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.